The final matter for hearing before the court this morning is in the matter of the formal inquiry concerning Judge A.P. Fuller. For the Judicial Qualifications Commission, we have Mr. Michael J. Schaefer, an attorney from Sioux Falls. And for Judge Fuller, we have Mr. Jack Heeb, an attorney from Aberdeen, and Mr. Thomas J. Nicholson, an attorney from Sioux Falls. The court, due to the unique nature of this case, has granted additional time from our normal procedure. Both sides will be allowed 30 minutes to present their openings, and then each side will be given a 10-minute rebuttal. Also, as the court has done in other cases in the past, the court would invite Judge Fuller to make a personal statement to the court. That is not mandated, but if he so chooses, he's welcome to do so. I understand Mr. Heeb will be speaking first for Judge Fuller, and then on the rebuttal, Mr. Nicholson will be presenting. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. Very well. Then, Mr. Schaefer, you may proceed, sir, and you have 30 minutes.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel, Judge Fuller. My name is Mike Schaefer. I appear here today as counsel to the Judicial Qualifications Commission. The inquiry concerning Judge Fuller began with a complaint filed by the Pennington County State's Attorney, Pennington County Sheriff, and the Rapid City Chief of Police, alleging that Judge Fuller referred to a police officer as racist or words to that effect while he testified during a juvenile proceeding. I think the actual transcript of the recording and the proceeding indicated that he made the comment, "bunch of racists," while the officer was testifying. The complaint was forwarded to Judge Fuller. He responded with a one-sentence statement, "The allegation is correct." After that, the commission hired then Commission Counsel Dave Nelson to conduct an investigation into the complaint and into issues concerning Judge Fuller's demeanor. Mr. Nelson submitted a lengthy report dated August 7 of 2010. After that, the commission voted to formally institute formal proceedings against Judge Fuller. Those proceedings took the form of a complaint that set out specific allegations and also incorporated by reference and attached to it a copy of the report, the investigative report from Mr. Nelson. That was dated September 7th. It was served on Judge Fuller. On September 9th, 2010, the commission issued an order to show cause why Judge Fuller should not be suspended during the pendency of the proceedings. A hearing on that order to show cause was held on September 30, 2010 in Rapid City. Following that hearing, the commission made a recommendation to this court, and this court entered an order on or about October 6, suspending Judge Fuller with pay during the pendency of the proceedings. Formal hearing on those was held on December 13, 2010 in Rapid City. Judge Fuller answered the complaint, was represented by counsel, and counsel requested to interview or contact witnesses. The commission directed that his attorneys could contact any witnesses they chose. Any of the attorneys that were referenced in the report were first to be contacted by me to advise them it was okay to talk to them, presumably because of the confidentiality concerns. And any court personnel they could interview with the stipulation that I would be either present or available on the phone when those interviews took place. 3 weeks before the hearing, both sides, at the direction of the commission, simultaneously exchanged witness lists, identifying the witnesses that were to be called. And following that exchange, Judge Fuller's attorneys chose to interview one of the court personnel, Mr. Krattenmaker, the court administrator in the Seventh Circuit. And there's a bone of contention in this case concerning what Mr. Krattenmaker told Mr. Nicholson and what he testified to. Mr. Krantenmaker allowed as though he was not going to testify concerning anything regarding judicial elections. I told Mr. Nicholson that Mr. Krantenmaker will testify that he was hit up for a $1,000 contribution by Judge Fuller. There's a dispute about it. Letters went back and forth. The commission resolved it by saying we're not going to consider that as substantive evidence of any violation of any canons or rules, but are going to consider it only for purposes of credibility. Prior to the hearing on December 13th, the lawyers for both sides stipulated that the hearing on the order to show cause held in September could be received into evidence without the necessity of recalling those witnesses. There was a dispute raised by Judge Fuller's attorneys that they did not want the investigative report, which was an exhibit to that hearing, to be received into evidence because of concerns of hearsay and double hearsay and that type of thing. And I think if the court looks at the actual findings that the commission made in this case, those findings are supported by evidence that was heard before the commission, either at the order to show cause hearing or the hearing on December 13th. I don't think any of those findings are based on anything that's hearsay that was contained in the report that wasn't supported by a witness testifying before the commission. Now, on this appeal, Judge Fuller argues for the first time that no allegations regarding his conduct can be considered by the commission or this court if they were not specifically set out in the body of the complaint. In other words, he claims that neither the commission nor this court can consider any of the allegations that were set forth in the investigative report that was made part of the formal complaint and that was supported by the testimony of those people that were called to testify at those hearings. Judge Fuller and his attorneys were clearly advised that these people were going to testify. They were advised of the substance of their testimony by what was set forth in the report. They were advised what Mr. Krantenmaker was going to testify to based on a personal interview with him. The only witness whose testimony was not set forth in the report that was presented at the commission was a third-year law student who worked as an intern for the Pennington County State's Attorney who testified that during a break in a legal proceeding, Judge Fuller commented to her that the legal profession was better before women belonged, and he wished it could go back to the way it was in 1916 and 1918. Judge Fuller never refuted that. He admitted that occurred. He admitted it was inappropriate. And the cases that we've disclosed to the court indicate that if somebody admits conduct, they've essentially waived any claim of a due process violation. The second due process allegation that's made is that Judge Jeff Davis, the presiding judge of the Seventh Circuit, sat on the commission and did not disqualify or recuse himself. At no time did Judge Fuller or his attorneys request Judge Davis to recuse or disqualify himself.
Does the commission have any internal rules, guidance on member should disqualify?
The only rules that govern the commission are set out in this court's rules, which essentially ask the individual whether he's got any sort of an interest, and they also incorporate the canons, which say that if his partiality could reasonably be questioned, just like a judge, that person should disqualify himself from those proceedings. Those are the rules that govern, and they're these court's rules that apply to that commission. Now, there's a presumption of honesty and integrity in those that serve in the capacity of adjudicators or that serve in a capacity like this. There's been no showing of actual bias or prejudice on the part of Judge Davis in these proceedings. And the question that comes to my mind is if Judge Fuller or his attorneys wanted him to disqualify himself or recuse himself, why didn't they ask him? There's no indication he wouldn't have done it if they would have requested. And I'm mindful also of this court's recent decision in the matter of Russell, which was a disciplinary proceeding, where a specific request was made of one of the members of the disciplinary board to disqualify himself, and he did. I'm also reminded that there's an allegation in that case that the board chair should have also recused himself that was raised at this court for the first time. This court also rejected. And this court in the Russell case also rejected similar allegations of claims of notice, of claims of this body has an investigative side and an adjudicatory function, and that those functions violate due process if they're combined. That's not true. This court in all of the disciplinary cases has held that the fact that those functions exist in that body doesn't violate due process. Every case I've looked at in this country involving judicial discipline have reached the same result. I haven't found one case that says that there is any due process violation just because part of their function is investigation and part is to make findings and a recommendation. This inquiry then comes down to Judge Fuller's conduct. And the conduct of Judge Fuller basically concerns his treatment of people in his court and his treatment of people in his official capacity as a judge. I don't think there's a serious dispute as to most of the findings in this case. There's no dispute, even from Judge Fuller, that he violated canons 1, 2, and 3 of the Code of Judicial Conduct. He admitted that, and he admitted that there was clear and convincing evidence to support the fact that he'd violated those canons. The commission found, finding 33, that Judge Fuller has engaged in a pattern of misconduct showing an utter lack of courtesy and total disrespect to court personnel over a period of years. The commission found in finding 72 that Judge Fuller has engaged in a pattern of misconduct showing utter lack of courtesy and disrespect for attorneys who have appeared before him over a period of time. At the order to show cause hearing, the commission heard testimony from an attorney who said that Judge Fuller, during a legal proceeding, flipped the bird to him in open court in the presence of his client. It concerned his client greatly. That case ultimately came to this court and went back. There was also testimony from a very experienced trial lawyer out there that Judge Fuller had abused the lawyer on the other side of a case that he appeared in during a jury trial and had basically commented at a break or something that when he practiced law, the judge was the enemy, so don't let me push you guys around. The testimony in that proceeding from the clerk of court in Custer County was that Judge Fuller became irate, visibly red, angry, and basically belittled and demeaned her because she tried to explain to him there wasn't any place at that time to take a jury out to eat in Custer. And at the hearing on December 13th, the commission heard the testimony from the clerk of courts of Fall River County, who testified that she had two deputies that refused to even go into his courtroom because of how they had been treated, one of whom had been a deputy clerk for 40-plus years, who had seen a number of judges in Fall River County from the Seventh Circuit, and who was reduced to tears and threatened to quit because of the hostile work environment that she experienced. And that clerk took over the courtroom to protect her staff. And when she did, she found that when she went to court with Judge Fuller there, virtually every time Judge Fuller made comments such as, goddamn clerk, goddamn schedule, virtually every time from the bench when the public was present in a rude and demeaning manner. And she said, he kind of laughed as if it was a joke, but it didn't feel like a joke.
Did she say they were directed at her personally?
She said that she was in court and the references to goddamn clerk, I think she took personally that they were references, maybe not where he pointedly said that to her, but they were said in her presence when she was sitting in the courtroom. Now, Judge Fuller, for his part, denied that he ever used language like that in court, and he admitted that if he had, it would be beyond rude. It would be terrible. He denied that. The commission, who had the opportunity to observe the demeanor of all of those witnesses, made a credibility finding and found her testimony to be credible and his not to be credible. They made a number of such findings where they found in favor of these witnesses and against him on crucial issues. And in fact, during the proceeding, Judge Wilbur point blank asked him, well, what do you think? All of these people came here and lied? And I understand that the court has to consider the entire record and should consider the entire record. But I think with respect to credibility determinations made by the commission, that those are entitled to some weight because of their opportunity to observe the demeanor of the witnesses while testifying. Judge Fuller, for his part, also claimed in his defense in this case that he never realized he was offending anyone. It never dawned on him. He had no clue he was mistreating these people until these proceedings.
Now, part of the proceedings, Judge Fuller had representation and some
he was not represented in the order to show cause hearing. After that, he was...
So some of this that you're talking about, did he have a lawyer at that point?
Or he didn't have... he had a lawyer at the hearing where the Fall River County Clerk testified. He had a lawyer at the hearing when all of the witnesses testified on December 3rd. He had two lawyers on December 13th.
Were any of these credibility determinations made at the show cause hearing with where he was without counsel?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of, Your Honor. The commission found that Judge Fuller's claim that he didn't realize he was offending anybody or didn't have a clue about that till these proceedings, they found that incredible. They found it not believable. They found that if that were true, it would raise questions concerning his insight, his judgment, and his fitness to serve as a judge. The commission took its responsibilities in this case very seriously. They heard the evidence. They made credibility determinations. They made findings, and they made a recommendation. None of the people that I called to testify wanted to be there. None of us want to be here. But this court will ultimately have to make the determination as to what the appropriate sanction should be in this case. This court is ultimately left with the responsibility of policing the judges in this state and setting the standard for those judges. There's been a suggestion that he should have been warned, or there should have been a warning, or the fact that there wasn't a warning somehow excuses his conduct. And I would submit that every judge should know that the canons, if not rudimentary principles of etiquette, require that people be treated with respect and dignity. And there has been a suggestion that other judges have done it or do it or conduct like this has gone on before, as if the bar should be set so low. I think people in this state and in this country have high standards for judges, and I think they should. And I think, fortunately, the judiciary is one of the last bastions in our country that still maintains respect of the citizens. And if it's to be held in that high regard, which I think it should be, conduct like this can't be dismissed. And I would share with you a thought that I have, that while this proceeding is about Judge Fuller in some respect, it's not totally about Judge Fuller. It's also about the public's perception of the system. It's about the public. And who represents the public but this court and the commission? And when I think about this case, I'm reminded of the testimony of the woman who came out of his court crying and was heard to say, "How is my kid going to get a fair shake when he refers to them as little peckerheads? How do you restore her confidence in the judiciary?" And I'm reminded of the litigant who sat in court and saw Judge Fuller flip the bird to his attorney, who became concerned, who took his case up to this court, had it come back, and had Judge Fuller ignore this court's decision and refuse to award prejudgment interest. How do you restore his confidence in the system? There's been some suggestion that he be put back on the bench with some form of mentoring or monitoring with no real concept of how it would work, who would pay for it, how another judge would look at his work or observe the tapes from his court. And in light of what's transpired here, and in light of the letter-writing campaign directed to this court by attorneys, what cases could he sit on if he ever went back to the Seventh Circuit? There is ample evidence to support the findings of the commission in this case. The conclusions regarding his violation of the canons aren't really disputed. He's admitted it. The issue boils down to what is the appropriate sanction, and that's ultimately this court's decision. And I cited a number of cases. One of them was a Crowell case out of Florida, where I read those cases again in preparation for this hearing, and one of the statements stands out. And they cited from another case, I think, but they said, "Conduct unbecoming a member of the judiciary may be proved by evidence of specific major incidents which indicate such conduct, or it may also be proved by evidence of an accumulation of small and ostensibly innocuous incidents which taken together emerge as a pattern of hostile conduct unbecoming a member of the judiciary." I don't think the commission ever would have reached the recommendation they did if it hadn't been for the accumulation of the pattern of conduct that they observed. That was the guts of their recommendation and the guts of their decision. And this court will have to determine whether that's appropriate or whether some other sanction is appropriate. I don't really have anything else. If the court has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. Mr. Heeb, you have 30 minutes.
I'm going 20, roughly, and then I'm going to turn it over to Judge Fuller.
Do you want the clock set at 20 then?
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. Surely set it at 20.
It's at
20. Okay. It's hard to see.
Okay.
May it please the court. Mr. Schaefer, what I'd like to impress upon the court today is what I've been thinking about with respect to this case, and I will agree with one thing that Mr. Schaefer said. This has been a difficult case to be involved in. I don't think any of us do want to be here. But the thought that I have and the thought that's permeated this case for me really deals with something that Mr. Schaefer did mention, which is this case isn't about Judge Fuller. It is and it isn't. And the aspect that I want to talk to the court about, or that I think is important, is the idea of an independent judiciary and an independent judiciary in the state. It's a lot easier, obviously, at the federal level when King George had the judges under his thumb and we wrote rules into the founding documents of this country that put judges in place for life and made it very difficult to get rid of them. And we all know why we did that and why that was such a good idea. And I think in many aspects, every judiciary, though, even ones in places like the state of South Dakota where we face elections, strives to be as independent as possible. As attorneys, we struggle with it in different forums and different venues where we are concerned about whether or not the judiciary is truly independent, whether the judge that we're appearing in front of will have the freedom to do or make a decision that may not be popular with the powers that be, that may not be popular with the majority of the people. And the one thing that gives me some degree of comfort as I come before the court is the fact that we've got very little authority in this state with respect to judicial discipline. What we do have is the Huerman case, where I think this court did a very good job of laying out the standard. And the standard that this court laid out of review is that there is an independent obligation to review the evidence. In fact, I believe in the Huerman case, the court specifically points out, if I recall correctly, in the second footnote of that case, that even applying a clearly erroneous standard to the findings of the commission would be inappropriate in light of the obligation of an independent review. So as I look at this, what really is happening here is I'm in front of the Supreme Court of South Dakota making an argument about the need for an independent judiciary, and it's really squarely on your shoulders. I'm not saying that the work the commission did wasn't important, but when we come here, it's your job, as I look at Huerman, to look at the record and to make an independent determination from the evidence, really without a lot of deference to those findings, and I think that's backed up by what this court said in Russell to the extent that that authority applies to judicial discipline. With that backdrop, I want to go back to to a comment that I've thought about throughout this case, which is that judges are human. And I think where most people would assume I'm going with that is, well, Judge Fuller's a human being. He's fallible. And what I really want to talk about, though, first, is that all judges are human. When I was in law school, we had professors that required us to attend the oral arguments there. I went to them anyway. It was the thing that I enjoyed the most. And I remember an oral argument. I looked it up to make sure I was right. There was a discipline case involving an attorney where Justice Amundson looked at him and said, you know, contrary to popular belief, judges don't live in a vacuum. And that, you know, that has stuck with me through my legal career when I think about why a judge, you know, the difficulties they struggle with in trying to make a decision or in trying to separate what they know to be true based upon the fact that they have a life, they leave the courtroom, they go to sporting events, they talk to people, and trying to separate those things. And in addition to that, in this particular case, I've thought about Pete Fuller's career as an attorney, which most judges are before they become judges, and the sacrifices that judges make to become judges. And I'm probably preaching to the choir a little bit as I stand in front of the Supreme Court making that argument, but I don't think people understand the isolation that you put yourself in, the isolated position. Your friends are your colleagues, and now all of a sudden, those same friends maybe can't be the same type of friends they were before. your financial, sometimes sacrifices that get made. You're leaving a practice. You're closing it up. You're putting yourself in a position where if this judge thing doesn't work out, I'm not sure what I'm going to do next. And those have to be fears that a judge has as they sit on the bench and try to make difficult decisions. And that's why an independent judiciary is so important. And what concerns me and what troubles me about this case is that when I look at what Judge Fuller did, what he's admitted to doing in this case, there was no illegal behavior on Judge Fuller's part. There was no gross incompetence. There was no habitual intemperance. There were none of the hallmarks that we see time and again where a judge essentially is told, that's it, you're done. And Mr. Schaefer's comment was a good one when he said this case isn't about Judge Fuller, but I want to point to a different direction when I agree with him and when he said that. Because I think what his comment was meant to mean was that we need to set a standard. We need to send a message. And what I'd like to impress upon this court, and I'm sure this court understands it, is you will send a message in this case. You will. One way or the other, you will send a message. And you will send a message to every sitting judge in the state of South Dakota and any judge who's going to sit on the bench in the future. And that message is going to be looked at by them and read by them, and they're going to have to make decisions themselves about what do I know about the Fuller case? What did Pete Fuller do? And I think we'd be believing judges live in a vacuum if we thought that there isn't a sitting trial judge in the state of South Dakota that probably doesn't know a significant amount about this case already. I think there's always that element, but for the grace of God, there go I, or at least there should be, if you're in a position of power that a judge holds. And the concern that I have about it is when you look at the fact that there's no illegal behavior, no gross incompetence, no habitual intemperance, and I look at what Judge Fuller did admit to doing, what he's admitted and what he's shown remorse for, in my opinion, since the day this started, is what Mr. Schaefer pointed out, and that is that there was no, admittedly, there was no contact with him about any of this. And I know if you look at the findings, if that's all you look at, and I don't think you should, I think you should look at the record, and I think you should try to read it in context. And I think you should try to read it in context of the proceeding and the rules that we are left to play by in this proceeding. I think you can see that much of what he's being accused of truly was behavior that, while it's absolutely inappropriate, it was never dealt with by anyone. And I made this comment to Pete, and I don't think I'm violating any privileges when I say this. When I agreed to represent him, I made a comment to him. I said, you know, it's been my observation that judges don't get the feedback most of us get in life. Most of us, if we're acting inappropriately, somebody tells us. And if they don't tell us point blank, they show us. We get that feedback. And we adjust accordingly. I said, you know, Pete, you might have thought that all your jokes were truly funny when you became a judge. You might have actually started to believe that, but I've got news for you. The reason people were laughing is because you wore a robe. You might have thought that you were truly the smartest person in the room, but I've got news for you. The reason people told you that is because you were wearing a robe. And I think that's a blessing and that's a curse for a judge. You know, you get to the point where you truly start to believe, as some people like to say, your own BS. And in the context of what we're talking about here, in the context of what Pete Fuller is being accused of doing, that was never pointed out. The fact that Pete has admitted my filter didn't exist at times. You know, there what I'm thinking came out my mouth, or what I thought when I thought I was being funny and I thought people knew I was being funny, I didn't realize the effect that I was having. And that takes me back to the second part of people, judges are human. They don't They don't put a robot and become computers or robots or infallible in any way, shape, or form. And when I look at the precedent, and I look at the recommendation that we're dealing with here, I really can't honestly square the two. I can't. The reason I can't is because I look at Huerman, which is the only case we've got in South Dakota. I look at the conduct there, which was clearly self-interest, lining his own pocket, frankly, taking a trip to a Dolphins game on the county's dime and on the dime of a couple of minor children's parents who he was ostensibly assisting, and the result of that case was censure. I look at all the cases we've cited for the court, and we've done an exhaustive search trying to find authority, and I don't find a single case where there's ever been a judge removed for even a pattern of conduct where there's been no effort at remediation, where there hasn't been a situation where the record shows over and over again, we tried and this person just didn't get it. The other thing that truly concerns me about that recommendation in light of this record, and I think this may be the most important part, and I think this may be the part that concerns me and others about the recommendation, is that there are accusations in this record, and if we go back to the original complaint that permeate this record to a great degree about Judge Fuller being, quote, anti-law enforcement. And I think that's dangerous. That's the thing that I think is the most dangerous about this case. And I can cite you to two places in the record reviewing it again last night. When the state's attorney for Pennington County testified in this case, he was asked by Judge Wilbur about the second part of the official complaint that he made, which was a second incident that was never really talked about, but it was attached and it's part of the record. And it was a detective who was interviewed about an action that Pete took with respect to one of his arrests. And Judge Fuller had suppressed evidence on his own motion. And when Judge Wilbur asked about that in the hearing of State's Attorney Brenner, he said, well, he has a habit of suppressing evidence in criminal cases without a motion from the defense, probably more so than any other judge. That's really what that was about. That's what that part of the complaint was about. The chief deputy from Pennington County, when she testified, characterized him as anti-law enforcement. She characterized her interview with the investigator as it was kind of a general conversation about his anti-law enforcement views. That's how she characterized it in her testimony on page 88 in the transcript. With that in mind, knowing that that's part of this record, knowing that's at least some of the basis for why we're here, I'm going back to the concern I have about an independent judiciary in the state of South Dakota. Because while Pete Fuller has faults, and he's going to get up here and talk to you about that, and he's going to get up here and I think try to show you the kind of remorse that I think he truly believes, what I'm concerned about are the judges who are sitting on the bench in the state of South Dakota that we're sending a message to, as Mr. Schaefer pointed out, who have to wonder every time they take the bench, and every time they think about the things that we know you're going to think about as a human being, and wonder whether I've made too many decisions that are anti-law enforcement. Is the prosecutor's office in a position where I'm going to get a complaint made against me? And I'm not, we all want to be perfect. I mean, we all think we're perfect in this business. I've been called a narcissist more times than I can count, and it's probably because I deserve that. And I think every one of us has a little bit of that. But at the same time, we're human. And to believe that a judge sitting on a case or sitting in a circuit isn't going to look at the result of this decision and just wonder themselves a little bit, am I too anti-law enforcement? Have I made one too many decisions that are going to take the wrong people and turn them against me? We lose the independence of this judiciary if that happens. And when I look at the recommendation that's made here, Mr. Schaefer's characterized it as a pattern. I'm not going to disagree with that on some level, but I am going to say nothing that Pete Fuller did was ever dealt with, and I'm not making an excuse for him. You know, he can admit his own flaws. He's got them, his own personality flaws. But nothing he did ever trampled on the rights of a defendant in a substantive way. He didn't take money. There was no graft. There was no corruption. There weren't the types of things that if you wanted to send a message that one strike and you're out, you should in those situations. Don't get me wrong. Every sitting judge in the state of South Dakota should know if I take a bribe, I'm not getting another chance. The Supreme Court sent that message loud and clear. What I want you to consider is the other message. The message about what happens if my decisions don't really line up with some of the people that I'm dealing with on a daily basis, and where will it all shake out for me in the end if I'm put in that position? Because that's really what got Judge Fuller here. Let's be clear about that. That was the complaint that got him here, that was signed off on by the chief of police, the sheriff, and the state's attorney in Pennington County. All of the other things that came out during the investigation, and I'm not sure how that got sorted the way it did, but those were not people that came to this body or to the Judicial Qualifications Commission and said, we've got a problem here that we think needs to be addressed. I'm not saying they weren't problems. I'm not saying they weren't conduct unbecoming of a judge. But what started this whole thing was a complaint by law enforcement that basically amounted to, this judge is anti-law enforcement. And that, in some respect, if you look at the record, and I know you have, permeated these proceedings to a degree. We heard about vans and the way they looked and the way they seemed, the message they seemed to send. We heard about things that, frankly, don't have anything to do with whether or not Pete Fuller's a good judge. I'm about out of time, and the message that I wanted to send to you is this. You will send a message in this case. You will. And what I want the court to consider long and hard is the message that they send to those people who are on the bench and who will take the bench in the future. And when you look at the evidence in this case, I can't make 2 and 2 equal 8. I can't understand a recommendation to remove this man from the bench when he has done nothing but show remorse. He has done nothing but indicate he's willing to change. The only evidence in the record suggests he's capable of change. And yet at every turn, when he's asked for it, when we've asked for it, we were basically told we don't want to talk about it by the commission. And I think that is a mistake in this setting, and I think that will send a message that will be extremely dangerous to the independence of the judiciary in South Dakota. I'm going to turn the floor over now to Judge Fuller, if that's acceptable to the court.
It is, Mr. Heeb. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Judge, you're invited, I guess, at this time to make a statement if you wish to.
I do.
Very well. You'd come forward, please.
May it please the court. This year, the state of South Dakota is 122 years old. And all that time, a Fuller has been in the law. Starting with my great-grandfather on this court, my grandfather, Thad, in Aberdeen, my father and my uncle, then me, and now my daughter. I say this because I'm ashamed. My conduct and actions have affected people I love and those I respect. I am totally remorseful for what I have done. I sought an evaluation, Dr. Arneal. I sought help from Mr. Holmes to give me the skills to change. I have learned a lot. I have learned I have the ability to change. In a perfect world, had I been left on the bench during this long hiatus, I would have been able to prove that to you. I know I have changed. I'm not perfect, but I have changed. Mr. Holmes, I've had 9 sessions with Mr. Holmes. Mr. Holmes has released me for now, but I am to return no matter what your decision is in this matter. I've thought about and ruminated over how can I go back to the bench under these circumstances. Judge Davis's assignment modification of September of 2010, where I take the large portion of the civil calendar, the divorce calendar, and the temporary protection orders, I thought was a good plan. This has shown to be effective in the Sioux Falls area. This would give me also an opportunity to try to make amends with the state's attorney's office. Implementation of the remediation plan that's been proposed. I have written the apology letters to each and every one of the people I've affected, apologizing to them, telling them that I'm ashamed of my conduct, and hoped that someday they would be able to forgive me. What have I learned from Mr. Holmes? That annoyance and irritation is anger. That body language and tone of voice is aggression. It's not the event or the circumstance, he instructs me. It's my response to that event and the way I act that brings the anger to the situation and the aggression. He's given me simple rules. Don't speak. Think. Remain calm. When and if I do speak, I am to observe the observations of the person that I'm talking to get feedback from that person, to see if, even if I think I'm being calm and I'm being respectful, but if the person is not perceiving what I'm saying that way, then I have to immediately recognize that with the person, and I have to apologize to the person. Again, I have no ill will. I have no animus. I have no bad feelings toward anyone involved in this case. With my new skills, I think I can go back and be productive. Whatever your decision is, it certainly can't be easy. The system, the profession, and the public all have to be considered. I promise, and I will not. Bring further disrespect or shame to the profession or to this court. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge. Okay, Mr. Schaefer, you have 10 minutes.
The original complaint came from law enforcement, but the commission made no findings about that were this is an anti-law enforcement or whatever. They made no findings on any of the rulings that Judge Fuller made. In fact, that second complaint that was attached, the commission didn't even consider or find that there was any merit to it. Judge Fuller admitted that when he called that police officer a racist or used the phrase bunch of racists in open court to him, that was wrong. It was wrong to do that. He may have thought that or felt it, but it shouldn't have been said. It shouldn't have been done in that fashion. He admitted that was wrong. The commission didn't make findings or conclusions regarding the substance of any of his rulings or say he shouldn't have done this or he shouldn't have conducted this suppression motion or suppressed this evidence. That's not why we're here. We're here because of his demeanor. We're here because this was a pattern of conduct. And I know that judges are human. One of my proudest experiences is when I got out of law school, I clerked for a judge on the Eighth Circuit who's in his 90s and who's still sitting on cases. And I held him in the highest regard and still do. But that man treated the janitor and everybody else that he came into contact with the utmost respect. And that's what we should expect of our judges. That's not to say we can't have a bad day. We all know that we can. That's not to say that we can't lose our temper. We know that we all can. But that's not what this record is. This is a record of a pattern of behavior. And I know Judge Fuller says now he's apologized or written letters of apology. But I asked him at the order to show cause hearing whether he'd ever apologized to anyone. And he hadn't. And the thought hadn't even dawned on him until I raised the issue that he should. He got feedback. When deputy clerks run out of the court crying in tears because of how you treat them, that's feedback. And when they refuse to come back into your court because of how you treated them, that's feedback. I don't envy the position that you're in, because it is, and I do think you ought to look at the entire record. And the comment that we, somehow the commission said we don't want to consider that or talk, I don't know what that relates to. I'm not aware of any evidence that the commission didn't consider. And I'm going to just leave it in your capable hands and let you decide what the appropriate sanction was. The commission felt retirement or removal was the appropriate sanction. The case law, there's case law that suggests that demeanor, even if it's a number of small instances that can add up to that, may warrant it. And you have to decide whether the remorse that Judge and shame that Judge Fuller has shown is genuine. That's for you to decide. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schaefer. Mr. Nicholson, you have 10 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, Mr. Schaefer. One of the things that I don't think any part of the investigation or the commission thrust dealt with ever until we came to the hearing on December 13th when Judge Fuller was represented and we brought in some what I call character witnesses because we weren't allowed under the confidentiality rules to let them see what the facts were and then ask them, if now that you know those facts, how do you feel about it? So what I'd like to visit with you about is what are the positive parts about Judge Fuller and can he be a good judge? And I want to draw your attention to Exhibit J. It's in the packet that you have that was sent to you by the commission. And it's written by Dr. Arneo, who, if you look in the record, no one ever was called to dispute his testimony. He's a PhD. He's been president of his association. He's been psychologist of the year in South Dakota. This is all in the packet. He's received outstanding leadership awards. He's won national awards. And he's someone that knew Judge Fuller from before any of this happened, had counseling with him about some personal family issues years ago, and who did an exhaustive examination of Judge Fuller. And I want to read to you his conclusion in a letter that he wrote to Mr. Schaefer, which ostensibly we'd have to consider went to the commission since Mr. Schaefer was representing the commission. And this is, I'm going to read this to you. It's just a sentence long. It says, and this is the conclusion that went to the commission I had before the hearing. It can further be stated that based on his high level of intelligence, the degree of distress he is experiencing concerning the complaints against him, his high level of motivation to change, and past history of being able to manage and correct personal deficiencies, the prognosis for Mr. Fuller to change his behavioral responses is very good. And I think that's very important because this record is, you know, it started with the comment that we've all talked about here, the race comment in the courtroom. But then there's an investigation. They go out into the field, and you'll see in the record that some of these lawyers, John Nooney and maybe others, said, I don't know how they ever got my name. And he came in. He's in there as making some supposedly part of negativeness about Judge Fuller. But this was never asked. Looked in the report. They did an investigation. It was never asked, is he a competent judge? Does he do his work and get his work out in production on time? Does he handle complex cases with competence? Is he honest? Does he have integrity? Is he fair? There's nothing balancing out the investigation by a neutral commission. So we come in and we call witnesses that say that he has all those characteristics of outstanding members of the bar, officers of the court that aren't going to come into court and make something up just to support somebody. And I think those letters to the court indicate that. I mean, I think there were 60 letters to this court of people that think he will be a good judge and they want him back on the bench. And who is it that supports him and thinks he can be a good judge? Civil lawyers, civil trial lawyers that have written this court and some testified. Obviously, we weren't going to call 60 witnesses to a proceeding. Family lawyers, women in law lawyers, public defenders, private criminal defense lawyers. They've all said that he's a competent judge. I think if you read some of those, they talk about how well he handles complex litigation. There aren't many judges that can do that because they don't have the trial background that Judge Fuller does. So he definitely has characteristics that can benefit the bench. And Dr. Arneau believes, and he's the only expert that testified in this case, says he has the capability to recognize the negative parts that have been spotlighted so significantly here, not counterbalanced by what he can bring to the bench. Dr. Arneau says he can improve on those negative items, and if you put him back on the bench, he brings all these good qualities to the court. Now, some of this stuff about feedback because someone went running out of his court, that was in 2004. We had this hearing at the end of 2006. The feedback that he got was not the kind, and I ask you to read Dr. Arneau's report and the anger management people, because I don't understand all the psychological principles that are stated in there. I'm not an expert. But Marshall Young, a former sitting judge in Pennington County, remembers, and he put an affidavit into this record, that said that in 2004 and 2006, there were questionnaires set out that were anonymous for the lawyers that dealt in that circuit. And he remembers, and this is in his affidavit, that Judge Fuller was in that category of lawyers that had positive comments about them. In other words, he was in that upper echelon. He put that in his affidavit. There was also that was in 2004, also in 2006. So we have reports from the lawyers at that time that he's a good judge. As this body knows, because you appointed me to 20 consecutive years of being on disciplinary boards. I was on the bar examiners for 14 years, and then the disciplinary board for 6. And this body had ultimate responsibility for everything we did. As you know, I am not aware of, and those are lawyers, but there are parallel disciplinary rules that deal with lawyers in the judiciary, and we don't have precedent for judges in this state, unless we go way back to Judge Hiraman, as far as these kinds of rulings, that anybody has been disbarred, which would be the equivalent of removal for a judge, when they've never had a complaint against them to the disciplinary body. They'd never previously been informed that what they were doing was wrong. They never committed a felony. There was no self-dealing. There were no bribes. He was never accused of altering an outcome or stealing from a trust account or anything like that. The only time people that I'm aware of that have ever been disbarred or gotten that ultimate sentence, so to speak, is for those kinds of actions. The only exception to that is if somebody had had multiple hearings and warnings in front of those bodies. This is Judge Fuller's first. And I think if you read those psychological reports, you'll see why it's not that unusual that he didn't recognize the problems that he was causing. Given the expert testimony that he is willing to change, he's capable to change, he recognizes his problems. He's already been disciplined to some extent by this body. He's been suspended for over half a year. He's been humiliated in the press with his family. And so the discipline part of this has already taken some shape. And I would suggest to this body that something, I agree that whatever you do here will send a message, but a public censure at this point, given he's already been suspended and humiliated, is the discipline part of it. So what's left is, can he be a productive member of the bench? And I think those things we've talked about in the record clearly indicate that he has that capability. And if we just focus on every little thing they went back and tried to find about him for 7 years, it doesn't give you a picture of the true individual. And I would ask you today to consider the overall picture and consider the facts on an independent basis. Censure publicly Judge Fuller, but whatever conditions you want, reinstate him on the bench and let him continue to be a competent and valuable member of the judiciary.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Nicholson. The court will be in recess.